Hey everyone, you're about to check out part two of our two-part discussion on Ellie. If you haven't already, we definitely encourage you to listen to part one because the conversation picks up right where Leo and I left off. Anyways, thanks for listening and I hope you enjoy this. Yeah, so the final flashback scene was the night before the game actually starts.
Yeah.
There was a big old hoedown in the town.
Yeehaw!
The Jackson get down.
Jackson get down. Leave jerky for everyone.
With probably a crazy assortment of records, but, you know, they... They're having this party. They had this really cool E3 cutscene or E3 game trailer that was basically this whole thing where Ellie is at this party hanging out. We don't know what's going on, but she's just hanging out. Dina shows up, rubs her face on Ellie's because she's all sweaty. And things get a little bit, I don't know, things get emotional between them, I guess, or romantic. And, Dina kisses Ellie.
Yeah.
It leaves Ellie shocked. This is after Ellie was talking to Jesse, Dina's ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. Tough look for Jesse, by the way, where she's like, you'll be back together soon. Cut to making out with his girlfriend in front of him.
But like after the kiss, you know, we get this jerk sandwich shop guy.
Seth. Yeah. Old bastard Seth.
The shitty sandwich Seth guy, you know, makes a really crappy homophobic comment about, you know, what happened between Dina and Ellie because he's a prude, even though in a world where you have to worry about being eaten alive by mushroom people, this guy decides that, like, you know what, let's just be homophobic. Yeah. Also. Let's bring this back.
World isn't hard enough. Let's have some bigotry, too. Yeah. Solid.
That's the one thing from pre-CBI that, like, I brought here, guys. Some bigotry in a steak sandwich. And so Joel pushes him away. Like, Joel isn't, you know, even though they're not talking, Joel isn't having that shit.
Yeah.
As he should. And so he, you know, he stood up to Seth and, you know, knocked him down a peg, put the fear of God in him.
Yeah. I can't remember who the woman's name, but she's like, kind of encourages Seth to back up. I'm just thinking, like, yo, Seth, if you saw half the shit I did in the last game, you would back up. This is Joel fucking Miller.
But, you know, he does this and, you know, that puts him in front of Ellie again. Like, he's like, ooh, you know, we haven't spoken in forever and she fucking hates me.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I didn't ask for your help.
Yeah.
And then she leaves.
I hope I'm not alone in this, but listeners out there, did any of you think this was like the last moment that they spoke? Because I thought that was the last thing she ever said to him before he dies. Because this is the day before the game starts and he dies that night. So I was thinking, I didn't ask for your help. Can you imagine if that was the last thing she ever said to him? Oh, God, I gasped. I was like, this is beyond heartbreaking. This is terrible. There is a follow-up scene. Thank the Lord. There is a follow-up scene where they have more of a conversation that night. And it's not to full reconciliation, but yeah, that's the ending of that scene. And that's what we get before we jump back to kind of present day.
And so, you know, like you mentioned, the very next patrol, Joel is unfortunately murdered by Abby. And it sets off the chain of events that is The Last of Us 2. And it's, you know, it's absolutely crushing because the final blow was also delivered in front of Ellie as she tried to help Joel.
I mean, talk about the embodiment of lacking agency, right? Being physically held down by like four people as the closest person in the world to you, even if you haven't been speaking for a couple of years, he's still basically dad. And you just the night before, you know, have this touching moment on a porch with him where you say, you know, I can't forgive you, but I'd like to try. And then that day you're talking to Dina about, oh, we're going to do a movie night. Like, oh my God, what an impactful thing that I didn't even know was impactful when I first heard it. To watch him be murdered. And she goes from encouraging Joel to stand up because she believes in him, reassessing, understanding the situation, begging them not to kill him because he's clearly not standing up. And then once they kill him, into this blind rage of, I'm going to kill you all. And that's when she's knocked unconscious. Like, oh, God, that emotional journey is just, it's too much.
But, you know, immediately she wants revenge. And the thing that happens is they also, you know, same thing. They take that agency away from her. Tommy is like, give me a day. Let me talk to Maria. And then Tommy dips.
Right.
By himself to go and get revenge. The thing that they both wanted so badly. And Tommy even tells Maria in the note, like, you know, maybe lock her up because she's going to try to go.
God, what a pattern. What a pattern this becomes.
Yeah, like Tommy was literally like, yeah, lock her up. Maria was like, no. And because like I would lock you up. I really think it's dumb that you guys are, you know, like, I don't think it's dumb. I understand why you guys are doing it, but I think you're putting your life on the line
for
something that you don't fully understand yet. But I'm going to let you go do this because I need you to get my dumbass husband back.
That's such a good point. Tommy really does in that moment fall into the same pattern of, you have feelings. I hear your plan. I respect your decision to do this thing. Nope.
Right, right. Like, you're hurting just as much as I am because I hadn't seen my brother in years. But fuck it. You know?
Yeah.
Basically just like, fuck it. I'm going to go. You stay here. Possibly go to jail. And we set off on this quest. And the beginning of the game is just processing. You're
right,
processing. Right. And you get it from her journal. Like, you just see that she's, you know, she's writing these song lyrics that she's got mostly crossed out, and they're just about Joel. It's about, you know, seeing his bludgeoned face when she sleeps. And then there's this other interesting portion. And she says, like, we saw a pack of wild horses today. They were skittish. Then Dina offered them some of the fruit we collected. They ended up following us for a bit. I wish I had a camera. I've never seen her smile so wide. For like a half a day, I wasn't thinking about the WLF or Joel. Feeling guilty about that now.
Ugh,
you see, like, those feelings of happiness with Dina were somewhat suppressing that feeling of guilt and anger and frustration and that need to kill.
And, I mean, she won't even let herself step away from the anger and the hatred. You know, she has this talk with Tommy before they go out on this trip where she says, if it were you or I who were killed, Joel would already have been halfway to Seattle by now. And it's this idea of Joel that she has in her head. It's like, it's so tragic because, again, she's kind of operating with this script of, well, I've got to be angry. I've got to want revenge. I've got to do it. And on this one day where Dina's stoked that she sees some horses, she's like, oh, I'm so happy that, oh, no, I can't be happy. I'm not allowed to be happy right now because I lost Joel. It's like, it's just this terrible feedback cycle, which is so sad. And I was also going to say really quickly that the journal is such a vibrant part of Ellie's growth in this game. You know, we talk about her exterior being cool, calm, and collected. And for the most part, with Dina, she'll say things like, I'm going to make them pay. But she says that kind of in a collected way. She's kind of projecting this confidence. I know where I'm going. We're not lost. You know, and they're even bantering, and there are times when I'm like, oh, this is a fun vacation that I'm taking with this, like, new relationship. That's fun. But then you look in the journal, and you see these entries, exactly to your point, Lawrence, where the song lyrics are like the height of melodrama, because she's feeling that. She's feeling just this bottomless pit of anger and anguish, and she's not really expressing that outwardly, which also coincidentally sets up Dina not really understanding what Ellie's going through in these kind of pivotal moments. So yeah, no, that journal entry is so sad to think that she's feeling regret or guilt about just being happy for a moment, you know, even though that's what Joel would want. Joel would want her to move on, be happy, you know.
It's right.
Gosh.
And ironically, that's the reason he's been lying to her.
Right.
You know,
right,
he lied to her for, he just wanted her to move on and enjoy a life. He didn't want her to carry that guilt of surviving and just being herself. And like, since they were never really, I mean, you know, since they weren't able to really approach that until later on, like, she always has had something, some sort of guilt of some kind that's just looming over her. And now she's got the guilt of not being able to save Joel and the guilt of not being able to stop until everybody who was involved is dead.
Right. We also see in her quest for vengeance and anger, clearly part of this is her enacting the violence and her enacting the retribution. When they find the first recognizable member of the Jackson crew, she voices like, "Ah, dang, I didn't get to do it," you know?
Yeah.
And this is really part of the problem. She doesn't want justice in the global sense of the idea. She wants to be the deliverer of this retribution, which she believes, for reasonable reasons, she believes they deserve. And it's tough, but that's also, Tommy is ahead of them, right? Tommy's a couple of days ahead of them. He's already kind of sowing some chaos amongst the WLF crew. And yet she still feels and expresses this need to be there on the front line, actually pulling the trigger and actually using her knife to right this wrong, which, again, isn't really even a wrong, because everyone's just kind of, it's all still reactive. It's still in this place of anger and reaction and retribution and revenge without really being guided by that clear mind that she had before Joel's death.
Yeah. And it only gets worse
from
there, because again, Dina is still here at this point. She's, you know, she's not hanging back in the in their little base that they have set up. So like, she can still provide, be that like voice of reason to Ellie, and she's like, you know, she can get through and be like, come on.
Even that moment that Ellie snaps at Dina, where she says, "Well, now you are a burden," after hearing that Dina's pregnant. What a thing to say to someone you love. And I get that she's saying that kind of out of shock, because you're like, new girlfriend is pregnant. That's crazy.
I think I'm pregnant.
What? Don't worry, it's not yours.
What are we supposed to do now?
Nothing. I just need to rest for a second.
Are you fucking kidding? How long have you known?
It was late a few weeks ago. A few weeks? We could have still turned back.
I didn't know. I wasn't sure, okay? I didn't want to be a burden.
Well, you're a burden now, aren't you?
It's really like, man, I don't know of an earlier time that Ellie really like says something that hurtful to Dina. And then when she makes the decision, "Hey, Dina, you should stay here, keep tracking them, you know, stay safe. I'll go out. I'll get them. It's fine. Like, I'll go. It's cool." This sets up this dynamic where Ellie, exactly to your point, Lawrence, Dina's the voice of reason. Dina's the one out in the field going, "It's okay. We'll deliver justice, but, you know, we don't have to be so mad about it." So now that Dina is back at the theater, we have this primed scene for Ellie to do some really, really tough shit, you know, like when she's like interrogates one of Abby's friends. That's a brutal moment.
"Where's Abby?"
"I'm fucking dead anyway. Why would I tell you anything?"
"I can make it quick, or I can make it so much worse."
Oh, God, that really is this descent into just hatred and violence as a means to accomplishing her goals. And I think, I don't know for sure, I think if Dina had been there, Ellie would not have done that. I think Ellie would have found another way, or they would have found a solution together. I really think that Dina and Ellie separating allowed Ellie to kind of more quickly fall into these desperate, violent means.
And she got super sloppy.
Yeah, that too.
Like,
yeah.
The reckless, Nora, right? The Nora, yeah, she was super reckless. The Nora kill was really, really reckless. Like, I don't think that she would have pushed her into, like, that pit where the infected were. And then, like, just that scene where she just beats her and beats her and beats her with that pipe. It's, like, enough, you know?
And we see her, like, shaking. Again, total testament to the animation quality of this game. The way that her hand is shaking as she's, like, opening the theater door and being welcomed back into the warmth by Dina is visceral. Like, I can feel the exhaustion and the shock of her own actions that she's sort of exhibiting. It's so detailed.
And, like, you think that savagely beating somebody with a pipe will quench your bloodlust, but not Ellie.
Always quenches mine, but no, clearly not enough for her.
So it gets, she gets much worse. She dives deeper into this now bloodlust. Then just one of the worst scenes in this game happens. Oh, yeah, yeah. So she goes at, she finds Owen and Mel, and Mel is pregnant.
Will say doesn't recognize that Mel is pregnant quite yet. And
yes,
I will say
Mel's wearing a big jacket.
I will say I was sympathetic to Ellie in this scene because, frankly, I mean, she should have known that, like, keeping the gun raised would not, like, encourage confidence in her intent not to hurt them. But, you know, Ellie says, I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to know where Abby is. And Owen and, like, Mel is like, yeah, I'll tell you. Sure. Yeah, Abby sucks. Yeah, I'll tell her exactly where she is. Like, she's also allergic to peanuts. Here's a bag of peanuts. Like, you're good. Go for it. Owen's the one who's like, I'm going to take action and I'm going to save the day. Oh, I died. Oh, no. And then,
no,
of course, this begins this unstoppable moment that leads to Ellie killing a pregnant lady. And Ellie didn't make the decision to have that moment become violent. It was really Owen acting and Ellie reacting. And then it's Mel acting and Ellie reacting. And then Mel is dead in front of her. And right on the tail of learning that Dina's pregnant and having this sense of, I need to protect her now that she's, you know, the miracle of life, to have killed a woman, a pregnant woman, unintentionally, it's devastating. It's like, yeah, you're so right. This is really one of the hardest scenes to watch play out. I mean, she's basically carried out by Tommy. Like, she's not doing well.
Because I just imagine that she just instantly sees Dina.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, how the hell can I face Dina, who's pregnant, you know, knowing what I've done by accident now? Like, she's starting to feel the effects of her vengeance.
Right.
The effects of her pursuit. Like, this, we talked about this before we started, but this addiction to vengeance, like, this is like her first hard crash.
Yeah. But this also, again, Abby finds Owen and Mel, and Abby doesn't see the situation. Abby doesn't see Ellie's side of it. So this spurns Abby into vengeance again, into this reactive cycle, because they are both very much caught up in these sort of cyclical experiences. Abby and Lev track Ellie back to the theater, and Abby kills Jesse, which sucks because Jesse is one of the best characters. And of course, also shoots Tommy in the head. Twist, Tommy doesn't die. Maybe it would have been better for everyone if he had. Not that I have any issue with Tommy as a character, but Jesus, dude, read the room and whatever. Doesn't matter. We'll talk about it. And thus the cycle continues because, of course, Abby nearly kills Dina as a sort of like, well, you killed Mel, who was pregnant, so I'm going to kill Dina. Good. Glad she's pregnant so that when I kill her, it's even more heartbreaking for you. But Lev is there.
Oh, yeah.
And we see this sort of what could have been if Dina had been there with Ellie, maybe Owen and Mel wouldn't have died. You know, this balancing force. Lev being there saves Dina's life, and Abby is convinced to leave them be and say, you know, never, I never want to see you again.
But yeah, Ellie survives this encounter. She survives certain death, and her and Dina go and settle down. They get that nice little farmhouse somehow that they were talking about. They gather some farm animals, and Dina gives birth to JJ.
Yeah, they did it. You're sitting on the tractor. God, that sky was so beautiful when she's sitting on the tractor with JJ, just looking out. It's just so perfect. So, and to see all of the little artifacts from Joel's house that have now moved to this new house, and to see this like little glimpses of the life that they've built up together, you know, dancing in the kitchen, putting music on the, what was that? The record player, you know, routine.
And you start, like, you know what I felt in that situation, you know, go laddering up to this, you know, this point we keep bringing up, agency, is like, this is something that she wanted to do. They talked about it.
Yeah.
Dina was like, you know, I had this idea. And, you know, Ellie was like, that's kind of nice. I'd do that. Like, so, you know, after all this shit, after all this senseless killing, after all this anger and death and whatever, you get the farm. You guys are happy. You got the kid. Life is good. End credits.
Yeah.
Thanks, Neil Druckmann.
The end. And that's where I stopped playing. Great game. 10 out of 10. But this is also, this is the same thing as before. It looks perfect. It looks so ideal. It looks like everything you could want. But we see this scene where the barn door slams shut and clearly Ellie is not okay.
Come on, little dude. Okay. Come on, little guy. Do you want to eat?
Clearly, Ellie is not okay. And whether or not she's been fully sharing with Dina, like clearly Dina is practiced in responding to this. Dina's not going, oh my God, what's happening? Dina knows now kind of what Ellie is maybe going through a little bit. But this perfect life that we've just been given a few minutes to explore is another facade for Ellie, as I understand it, right? And though they have a lot of the boxes checked, things that they wanted and that they kind of fantasized and dreamed about together, Ellie is like not sleeping. She's really living this tortured life.
Yeah.
Feeling absolutely awful because she, you know, her that obsession isn't gone. It's not gone. She's just kind of burying it and maybe trying to distract herself from it, but it's not gone and it's eating her from the inside. And it's really like, I don't know. It was a very visceral scene because, again, I wanted her to stay. But did I really want her to stay if it meant slowly going mad? No, of course not.
Yeah, because she was having, you know, she's experiencing some pretty strong PTSD. Like a rake fell and she went into that panic.
Right.
She doesn't have closure. She doesn't let this, you know, she's just living in like, this is no, this is like a more intensified version of going from the hospital to Jackson, you know? Ellie wasn't able to live guilt-free just from doing nothing in the first place.
Right.
But
right.
Like, now that you've given her a specific task and it's not necessary, it's not been completed. And by all accounts to her, it probably feels like she just failed. It's crushing her. And then, of course, you get Tommy pulling up on his fucking horse and turn into a jackass.
Reckon it's easy. Forget about her. You sitting all comfy way out here?
Hey.
I'll make her pay.
Tommy.
That's what you said when we got back to Jackson.
Tommy.
What a joke.
Can you take him, please?
Yeah.
Here. I got you.
Hey. What the fuck was that?
Nothing.
God damn it, Tommy. You know what we've been...
I'll say, she made me a promise.
I don't fucking care.
I know you don't, dear. That's your goddamn promise.
Tommy comes in with some really shitty Jimmy Cooper-like energy and just forces Ellie. And he doesn't... Here we go again with this fucking agency stuff, because he doesn't let her say no. We start off this quest with Tommy not letting her freaking go.
Bro,
and then
yeah.
We end this quest with Tommy not letting her say no. It's like, Tommy, what the fuck, man? Stop. You know, Tommy's lost everything at this point.
Yeah.
He's like,
it's yeah.
Tommy
he's
is.
He's had a hard time.
Some,
it's true.
Yeah. But like, he's like, you know, you said you wanted to do this. So like, now you got to do it because I can't do it, obviously. And it's almost like he's blaming her.
Right.
For his condition and not the fact that he chose to do this.
And like left her behind.
And I mean, in all intents and purposes, like. She kind of had to. She kind of had to, but she
yeah.
should have been able to make that decision on her own.
Right.
Not being forced into it.
You're so right. I mean, again, one of those when it cut to California and you're playing as Abby and then you cut to Ellie in California, I had that moment of like, do I really want to be here doing this? But then when I ultimately thought about it, like, would her story have been done? Would she have been healthy and happy? And, you know, would it have been a complete arc? For Ellie. Like, would Ellie be right. in a good place if she didn't follow this through? So, yeah, it's tough. You're so right, man. Tommy might be the villain of this game. This game doesn't have a villain,
yeah.
but clearly Tommy's the villain.
All right. We're going to keep this conversation going, but first, a quick break.
Beyond the Stars. An ancient secret beckons. Armies clash and fight for dominance, unaware of the part they are playing in cosmic destiny. Among the chaos, one soldier, the Master Chief, stands for hope and becomes a beacon for all humanity. Hello, I'm Connor, a regular producer here on Lore Party. Join me and my co-host Jaden as we explore the world of Halo. Come with us as we jump into the intricate stories behind the games, explore the many thrilling adventures that take place throughout the setting, dissect the ethical quandaries that arise during futuristic interstellar conflict, and much more. To find our series, simply search for Halo in your Lore Party feed. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the great journey.
We make it to California. We get there, and we make it to California 5 minutes after Abby gets captured. Psych.
Yeah.
Super psych. But we make it to, you know, we make it to California. We get caught in a weird ass trap.
That sucked. That sucked. When she gets stabbed in the side by the tree, I was like, really? This is how the game is.
Yeah, I was like, oh God, what's going to happen? And then we encounter Guy Fieri.
Yo, Flavortown was not treating him well.
Dude, that was like...
She took him to Flavortown.
Odd fat Guy Fieri with his camo shorts on. And, you know, we had to trick his buddy into getting eaten.
That was a good move. That was a good move. That was clean. I like that.
That was awesome. So we got... You know, we finally bring ourselves from this trap, and we find out that, yeah, they captured Abby like 3 months ago. And
crazy.
Abby and Lev, like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh shit, it's been a long time. And Abby and Lev are slaves.
What? Slaves. Yeah, like, that's
like, whoa.
Another thing that this post-apocalyptic world really, you know, if you're going to bring anything to the post-apocalyptic world, let's focus on positive things, people. The like homophobia and slavery really could have left those pre-CBI, frankly.
We're just basically talking about a group of people that are effectively starving other people into forced labor camps.
Yeah.
So Ellie makes her way into the slave camp and frees a bunch of people who are imprisoned as slaves who tell her where to go to find Abby. So she goes there and down by the pillars. And Dick, your thought was when you come here, Abby just is escaping. Because, you know, we've seen Abby. Abby can get at anything. She's fucking strong. She's resourceful.
Yeah.
She's got Lev. You come down here, and what you see is a completely malnourished Abby. Abby goes from, like, being very, very muscular and strong to, like, skinny as hell.
Yeah.
Sickly skinny. And Lev is just down to the bone, basically.
Right.
And so you think, after traveling this far, after going through this, after seeing this person who's caused you this great pain and suffering, you just say, fuck it. It's not worth it. Like, they got what they deserve.
Has been a slave for 3 months.
3 fucking months. They got what they deserve. Like, I mean, like, effectively, when can you say in life, like, someone who's greatly wronged you, that has happened?
Yeah.
That is, like, if there was going to be karmatic justice for someone, it was like, boom, bang, kapow.
But it wasn't her choice for that to happen to her, so it's not good enough, right?
Yes, 100%.
It's brutal because, you know, we were talking about this a little earlier, and Ellie is such the villain in this scene. Like, there's no defending. You find someone who's been a slave for the last 3 months. You cut them down. They're sickly. The last time you saw them, they were probably like 200 pounds solid muscle. And now they're like 115 pounds. Like, she's so just shriveled up and sickly. And granted, when the fight starts, you know, when she says, I'm going to kill Lev if you don't fight me. And Abby goes, oh my God. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I don't want Lev to die. Sure. Let's fight. When she launches herself into that first attack, credit where credit is due, that's a ferocious first attack. Like, I went from, this is going to be so sad, you know, putting down a sad, sickly animal. And then, holy shit, Jesus, it's a fight. It's a real fight. But it's also one that Abby has no chance of winning against Ellie.
Yeah.
And Ellie has to know in that moment that she's on the wrong side of it, you know, threatening a child, a sleeping child with a knife.
So you have to fucking fight her, and you do it, and you're basically just, she bites off your finger, two of your fingers, and you're just holding her underwater like, I'm gonna drown her. And I'm like, seriously, in tears, like, please, dear God.
Right.
And we just have this flashback.
Yeah, it's the briefest of flashes, right? She's got Abby under the water. She sees this moment, the heartbreaking final moments that she has with Joel before she goes to bed, you know, the night before the game starts, before she sleeps in, to Jesse's chagrin. But this brief flash of him looking at her from this scene, and it's so important because, you know, again, this is the flash. This flash of him on that porch is what pulls her back from the precipice of killing Abby. It's an inspiration maybe for her to start claiming that agency that is so often taken from her in this moment, that it would be so easy to just keep on with the violence and kill Abby. But it pulls her back.
No. Just take him.
Thank you. So, yeah, Ellie is back at the farmhouse. Dina's put all of her belongings in one room. And as she kind of looks at her belongings, right, these remnants of the life she left behind, she picks up the guitar and we have this moment where she, you know, you try to do the swipey thing on the control pad and to play guitar and it just doesn't really work because, you know, turns out fingers are important for playing guitar. But this thing, this guitar that was so much of, you know, Joel gave it to her, the moth on the fretboard of the guitar is why she got the moth tattoo to cover the bite mark. You know, this guitar is a big part of her life, and it really symbolizes everything that Joel was for her, which is good and bad, to Neil Druckmann's point, the positive and the negative sides to love and what we do in the name of love. And we get this final cutscene that we've talked about a couple of times, but just to reiterate, it's this moment where she has this final reconciliation-ish with Joel after the scene with Seth, right? Which was the first time that they had spoken in like 2 years.
You're such an asshole.
I'm not trying to.
I was supposed to die in that hospital. My life would have fucking mattered. But you took that from me.
Somehow the Lord gave me a second chance at that moment. I would do it all over again.
I don't think I can ever forgive you for that. But I would like to try.
So they have this talk. Joel talks about the coffee. You know, they kind of dodge around the topic of Dina kissing her. In any case, it's this really heartfelt moment. It's, again, it's one of my favorite scenes in the game. And it wraps up, in a lot of ways, the final moments that she has with Joel before seeing him in the basement. And it basically gets us to a place where now we've seen almost the whole picture. We've seen almost the whole picture of their journey together. And it leads us into this final moment where Ellie puts the guitar down, she grabs her little backpack, leaves everything behind, and leaves the building. And we see her walking into the forest away from this farmhouse that she had. And it's so, again, I've used the word too many times in this episode, but I'll use it again. It's poignant. It's really, it's got some real power to it, that scene. And left purposefully up to the interpretation of the gamer of what's happening next, but really clearly the end of a chapter.
Yeah. And she's finally getting to, you know, have some agency in her life and make these decisions. You know, she's decided to move forward, and wherever she goes, I'd like to think that Ellie is, she's doing that, you know? She's moving forward.
As we kind of come to an end of this lengthy recap, but kind of interspersing some analysis, what do you think about the arc of Ellie's story? You know, some people have suggested that it would have been better if she had stayed with Dina, you know, worked through it, do some post-CBI counseling and therapy. Some people have suggested it would be better to kill Abby so that Abby's dead and there isn't this kind of temptation to continue that feud. How are you feeling about that?
I feel like this arc for Ellie was actually great.
Oh, sure.
We're seeing a lot of the same themes that we saw with Ellie in the first game, where in terms of like her attachments to people. But I feel like the way this game wraps up, it was so good and it made so much sense that she didn't kill Abby and she didn't necessarily just go and run back to Dina. Because I think that the events of the end of the game show us that there's been this sort of like emotional, spiritual rebirth where she's finally been able to move on and she's finally been able to make the decision on her own.
Right.
You know, gone are the people who make decisions for her. The people that prevented her from making decisions aren't around anymore. It's just her. And I think it needs to be her because I think like she wasn't able to do that for so long. So I think it makes sense. Like, she decided to not kill Abby. Nobody yelled, "Hey, stop."
Right. Yeah. Great point. Yeah.
That was her doing all on her own. You know, she came back, she put down the guitar, she remembers Joel in a way where it's not like there's not this negativity tied to it, because even in the best scenes, the best of Joel, it always wrapped up so negatively. There's always a question about you're lying to me or you're doing this.
Right. Yeah.
This last memory of Joel is like he just cared and he did what he did because, good or bad, he did it because that was his decision.
Right.
Now I'm able to go out and make mine.
You know, I found myself as the game was ending, I found myself going, you know, at each step of the way, I'd go, come on, this is enough. You know, end, please. So much sadness, so much suffering. I'm tired of crying, please. But I also then would immediately, I would catch myself and I'd go, would I really feel satisfied if Ellie's story ended here? So I think I'm 100% in agreement. It's the whole thing, her whole journey from the moment in Boston through the first game and through, you know, American Dreams and through Left Behind, there's a lot of Ellie being subject to the whims of others and being pushed around and having choices taken from her. And that realization that Joel was not this violent, lying, I mean, he's a violent, lying person, but he was a violent, lying person who really, exactly to your point, at the end of the day, loved her so much. And it is still, you know, I could see someone arguing that it still took a memory of Joel to pull her back from that precipice. But I think it's also a good reminder that we don't do anything alone. You know, we don't truly make decisions 100% in a void. And the fact that it was this new dimension to his character that she was letting into her heart, that he was someone who had agency and that he made these decisions and would stand by them. I do think that you're totally right about this kind of idea of rebirth. She's in a square one position now of she can move forward and make decisions, and the people that she meets and the communities that she joins or the, you know, experiences that she has, we can be sure that she's learned a lot over the last, you know, 6-7 years, and we'll go forward with a strong sense of agency and making her own decisions. Well, that about wraps it up. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. Be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @lore_party, and check out our YouTube page for bonus videos and highlights. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.